Cryptic Canticles welcomes you to the Dracula Radio Play experience. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this full audio performance of Bram Stoker's masterpiece, released chronologically by entry date.
Dr. Seward's Diary, 30 October, 7 a.m. We are near Galatz now, and I may not have time to write later. Sunrise this morning was anxiously looked for by us all. Knowing of the increasing difficulty of procuring the hypnotic trance, Van Helsing began his passes earlier than usual. They produced no effect. However, until the regular time, when she yielded with a still greater difficulty, only a minute before the sun rose. The professor lost no time in his questioning. Her answer came with equal quickness.
All is dark. I hear water swirling by, level with my ears, and the creaking of wood on wood. Cattle low, far off. There is another sound, a queer one like...
She stopped and grew white, and whiter still.
Go on, speak, I command you!
At the same time, there was despair in her eyes, for the risen sun was reddening even Mrs. Harker's pale face. She opened her eyes, and we all started as she said, sweetly and seemingly with the utmost concern.
Oh, Professor, why ask me to do what you know I can't? I don't remember anything.
Then, seeing the look of amazement on our faces, she said, turning from one to the other with a troubled look.
What have I said? What have I done? I know nothing, only that I was lying here, half asleep, and heard you say, "Go on, speak, I command you." It seemed so funny to hear you order me about, as if I were a bad child.
Oh, Madame Mina, it is proof, if proof be needed, of how I love and honor you, when a word for your good, spoken more earnest than ever, can seem so strange, because it is to order her who I am proud to obey.
The whistles are sounding. We are nearing Galatz. We are on fire with anxiety and eagerness.
Bina Harker's journal. 30 October. Mr. Morris took me to the hotel, where our rooms have been ordered by telegraph, he being the one who could best be spared, since he does not speak any foreign language. The forces were distributed much as they had been at Varna, except that Lord Godalming went to the vice-council, as his rank might serve as an immediate guarantee of some sort to the official, we being in extreme hurry. Jonathan and the two doctors went to the shipping agent to learn particulars of the arrival of the Serena Catherine. Later, Lord Godalming has returned. The council is away, and the vice-council sick, so the routine work has been attended to by a clerk. He was very obliging, and offered to do anything in his power.
Jonathan Harker's Journal, 30 October. At 9 o'clock, Dr. Van Helsing, Dr. Seward, and I called on Messrs. Mackenzie and Steinkopf, the agents of the London firm of Hapgood. They had received a wire from London in answer to Lord Godalming's telegraphed request asking them to show us any civility in their power. They were more than kind and courteous, and took us at once on board the Tsarina Catherine, which lay at anchor out by the river harbour. There we saw the captain, Donaldson by name, who told us of his voyage. He said that in all his life he had never had so favourable a run.
Man, but it made us afeard, for we expected that we should have to pay for it with some rare piece of ill luck so as to keep up the average. It's no canny to run for London to the Black Sea wi' a wind ahint ye, as though the devil himself were blowing on your sail for his ain purpose. And at the time, we could no spear a thing. Gin we were nigh a ship, or a port, or a headland, a fog fell on us and travel with us, till when after it had lifted and we looked out, the devil a thing could we see. We ran by Gibraltar without being able to signal, until we came to the Dardanelles and had to wait to get our permit to pass. We never were within hail aught. At first I inclined to slack off sail and beat about till the fog was lifted, but whiles I thought that if the devil was minded to get us into Black Sea quick, he was like to do it whether we would or no. Gin we were nigh a ship, or a port, or a headland, a fog fell on us, and travel with us, till when after it had lifted and we looked out, the devil a thing could we see. We ran by Gibraltar without being able to signal, until we came to the Dardanelles, and had to wait to get our permit to pass. We never were within hail aught. At first I inclined to slack off sail and beat about till the fog was lifted, but whiles, I thought that if the devil was minded to get us into Black Sea quick, he was like to do it whether we would or no.
This mixture of simplicity and cunning, of superstition and commercial reasoning, aroused Van Helsing, who said,
"Mine friend, the devil is more clever than he is sought by some, and he know when he meet his match."
The skipper was not displeased with the compliment, and went on.
When we got past the Bosphorus, the men began to grumble. Some of them, the Romanians, came and asked me to heave overboard a big box which had been put on board by a queer-looking old man just before we had started for London. I had seen them spear at the fellow and put out their 12 fingers when they saw him to guard them against the evil eye. Man, but the superstition of foreigners is perfectly ridiculous. I sent them about their business pretty quick. But as just after a fog closed in on us, I felt a wee bit as they did and at something, though I wouldn't say it was again the big box. Well, on we went, and as the fog didn't let up for 5 days, I just let the wind carry us. For if the devil wanted to get somewheres, well, he would fetch it up a reap. And if he didn't, well, we'd keep a sharp lookout anyhow. Sure enough, we had a fair way in deep water all the time. And 2 days ago, when the morning sun came through the fog, we found ourselves just in the river opposite Galatz. The Romanians were wild, and wanted me right or wrong to take out the box and fling it in the river. I had to argue with him about it with a handspike. And when the last of them rose to the deck with his head in his hand, I had convinced them that evil eye or no evil eye, the property and the trust of my owners were better in my hands than in the River Danube. They had, mind ye, taken the box on the deck ready to fling in, and as it was marked Galatz via Varna, I thought I'd let it lie till we discharged in the port and get rid of it altogether. We didn't do much clearing that day, and had to remain and act at anchor. But in the morning, broad and early, an hour before sunup, a man came aboard with an order written to him from England to receive a box marked for one Count Dracula. Sure enough, the matter was one ready to his hand. He had his papers a-reet, and glad I was to be rid of the damn thing, for I was beginning myself to feel uneasy at it. If the devil did have any luggage aboard the ship, I'm thinking it was none other than that same.
What was the name of the man who took it?
Asked Dr. Van Helsing with restrained eagerness.
I'll be telling you quick,
he answered, and stepping down into his cabin, produced a receipt signed Emanuel Hildesheim. Bergenstrasse 16 was the address. We found out that this was all the captain knew, so with thanks, we came away. We found Hildesheim at his office, a Hebrew of rather the Adelphi Theatre type, with a nose like a sheep and a fez. His arguments were pointed with specie, we doing the punctuation, and with a little bargaining, he told us what he knew. This turned out to be simple but important. He'd received a letter from Mr. Deville of London, telling him to receive, if possible before sunrise so as to avoid customs, a box which would arrive at Galatz in the Tsarina Catherine. This he was to give in charge to a certain Petrov Skinsky, who dealt with the Slovaks who traded down the river to the port. He had been paid for his work by an English banknote, which had been duly cashed for gold at the Danube International Bank. When Skinsky had come to him, he had taken him to the ship and handed over the box, so as to save porterage. That was all he knew. We then sought for Skinsky, but were unable to find him. One of his neighbours, who did not seem to bear him any affection, said that he had gone away 2 days before, no one knew whither. This was corroborated by his landlord, who had received by messenger the key of the house, together with the rent due, in English money. This had been between 10 and 11 o'clock last night. We were at a standstill again. Whilst we were talking, one came running and breathlessly gasped out that the body of Skinsky had been found inside the wall of the churchyard of St. Peter, and that the throat had been torn open as if by some wild animal. Those we had been speaking with ran off to see the horror, the women crying out,
"This is the work of a Slovak."
We hurried away, lest we should have been in some way drawn into the affair, and so detained. As we came home, we could arrive at no definite conclusion. We were all convinced that the box was on its way by water to somewhere, but where that might be, we would have to discover. With heavy hearts, we came home to the hotel to Mina. When we met together, the first thing was to consult as to taking Mina again into our confidence. Things are getting desperate, and it is at least a chance, though a hazardous one. As a preliminary step, I was released from my promise to her.
Mina Hawker's Journal, 30 October. They were so tired and worn out and dispirited that there was nothing to be done till they had some rest. So I asked them all to lie down for half an hour, whilst I should enter everything up to the moment. Oh, I feel so grateful to the man who invented the traveler's typewriter, and to Mr. Morris for getting this one for me. I should have felt quite astray doing the work if I had to write with a pen. Oh, it is all done. Poor dear, dear Jonathan. What he must have suffered. What he must be suffering now. He lies on the sofa, hardly seeming to breathe, and his whole body appears in collapse. His brows are knit, his face is drawn with pain. Poor fellow. Maybe he's thinking, and I can see his face all wrinkled up with the concentration of his thoughts. Oh, if I could only help at all. I shall do what I can. I have asked Dr. Van Helsing, and he has got me all the papers that I have not yet seen. Whilst they are resting, I shall go over all carefully, and perhaps I may arrive at some conclusion. I shall try to follow the professor's example, and think without prejudice on the facts before me. I do believe that under God's providence I have made a discovery. I shall get the maps and look over them. I am more than ever sure that I am right. My new conclusion is ready, so I shall get our party together and read it. They can judge it. It is well to be accurate, and every minute is precious. Mina Hawker's memorandum, entered in her journal. Ground of inquiry. Count Dracula's problem is to get back to his own place. A. He must be brought back by someone. This is evident. For had he power to move himself as he wished, he could go either as man, or wolf, or bat, or in some other way. He evidently fears discovery or interference. In the state of helplessness in which he must be, confined as he is between dawn and sunset in his wooden box. B. How is he to be taken? Here a process of exclusions may help us. By road? By rail? By water? Item 1. By road. There are endless difficulties, especially in leaving the city. X. There are people, and people are curious, and investigate. A hint, a surmise, a doubt as to what might be in the box would destroy him. Y. There are, or there may be, customs and octroi officers to pass. Z. His pursuers might follow. This is his highest fear. And in order to prevent his being betrayed, he has repelled, so far as he can, even his victim, me. Item 2. By rail. There is no one in charge of the box. It would have to take its chance of being delayed, and delay would be fatal with enemies on the track. True, he might escape at night, but what would he be if left in a strange place with no refuge that he could fly to? This is not what he intends, and he does not mean to risk it. Item 3. By water. Here is the safest way, in one respect, but with most danger in another. On the water, he is powerless, except at night. Even then, he can only summon fog and storm and snow and his wolves. But were he wrecked, the living water would engulf him, helpless, and he would indeed be lost. He could have the vessel drive to land, but if it were unfriendly land, wherein he was not free to move, his position would still be desperate. We know from the record that he was on the water, so what we have to do is to ascertain what water. The first thing is to realize exactly what he has done as yet. We may, then, get a light on what his task is to be. Firstly, we must differentiate between what he did in London as part of his general plan of action, where he was pressed for moments and had to arrange as best he could. Secondly, we must see, as well as we can surmise it from the facts we know, what he has done here. As to the first, he evidently intended to arrive at Galatz and sent envoys to Varna to deceive us, lest we should ascertain his means of exit from England. His immediate and sole purpose, then, was to escape. The proof of this is the letter of instructions sent to Emmanuel Hildesheim to clear and take away the box before sunrise. There is also the instruction to Petrov Skinsky. These we must only guess at, but there must have been some letter or message since Skinsky came to Hildesheim. That, so far, his plans were successful, we know. The Tsarina Catherine made a phenomenally quick journey, so much so that Captain Donaldson's suspicions were aroused. But his superstition united with his canniness played the Count's game for him, and he ran with his favoring wind through fogs and all till he brought up blindfold at Galatz. That the Count's arrangements were well made has been proved. Hildesheim cleared the box, took it off, and gave it to Skinsky. Skinsky took it, and here we lose the trail. We only know that the box is somewhere on the water, moving along. The customs and the Okri, if there be any, have been avoided. Now we come to what the Count must have done after his arrival on land at Galatz. The box was given to Skinsky before sunrise. At sunrise, the Count could appear in his own form. Here we ask why Skinsky was chosen at all to aid in the work. In my husband's diary, Skinsky is mentioned as dealing with the Slovaks who trade down the river to the port, and the man's remark that the murder was the work of a Slovak showed the general feeling against his class. The Count wanted isolation. My surmise is this, that in London the Count decided to get back to his castle by water, as the most safe and secret way. He was brought by the castle by Skeni, and probably they delivered their cargo to Slovaks who took the boxes to Varna, for they were shipped to London. Thus the Count had knowledge of the persons who could arrange this service. When the box was on land, before sunrise or after sunset, he came out from his box, met Skinsky, and instructed him what to do as to arranging the carriage of the box up some river. When this was done, and he knew that all was in train, he blotted out his traces, as he thought, by murdering his agent. I have examined the map and found that the river most suitable for the Slovaks to have ascended is either the Pruth or the Sereth. I read in the typescript that in my trance I heard cows low and water swirling level with my ears and the creaking of wood. The Count, in his box, then, was on a river, in an open boat, propelled probably either by oars or poles, for the banks are near, and it is working against stream. There would be no such if floating downstream. Of course, it may not be either the Sereth or the Pruth, but we may possibly investigate further. Now, of these two, the Pruth is more easily navigated, but the Sereth is at Fundu, joined by the Bistriza, which runs up along the Borgo Pass. The loop it makes is manifestly as close to Dracula's castle as can be got by water. Mina Harker's journal, continued. When I had done reading, Jonathan took me in his arms and kissed me. The others kept shaking me by both hands, and Dr. Van Helsing said,
"Our dear Madame Mina is once more our teacher. Her eyes have been ver vivo blinded. Now we are on the track once again, and this time we may succeed. Our enemy is at his most helpless, and if we can come on him by day on the water, our task will be over. He has a start, but he is powerless to hasten, as he may not leave his box lest those who carry him may suspect. For them to suspect would be to prompt them to throw him in the stream where he perish. This he knows, and will not. Now, men, to our council of war, for here and now we must plan what each and all shall do."
"I shall get a steam launch and follow him,"
said Lord Godalming.
"And I, horses to follow on the bank, lest by chance he land,"
said Mr. Morris.
"Good. Both good. But neither must go alone. There must be force to overcome force if need be. The Slovak is strong and rough, and he carries rude arms."
All the men smiled, for amongst them they carried a small arsenal.
"Well, I brought some Winchesters. They are pretty handy in a crowd, and there may be wolves. The Count, if you remember, took some other precautions. He made some requisitions on others that Mrs. Harker could not quite hear or understand. We must be ready at all points."
Dr. Seward said,
"I think I had better go with Quincy. We have been accustomed to hunt together, and we too, well armed, will be a match for whatever may come along. You must not be alone, Art. it may be necessary to fight the Slovaks. And a chance thrust, for I don't suppose these fellows carry guns, would undo all our plans. There must be no chances this time. We shall not rest until the Count's head and body have been separated, and we are sure that he cannot reincarnate.
He looked at Jonathan as he spoke, and Jonathan looked at me. I could see that the poor dear was torn in his mind. Of course he wanted to be with me, but then the boat service would, most likely, be the one which would destroy the vampire. Why did I hesitate to write the word? He was silent a while, and during his silence, Dr. Van Helsing spoke.
Friend Jonathan, this is to you for twice reasons. First, because you are young and brave and can fight, and all energies may be needed at the last. And again, that it is your right to destroy him. That which has wrought such woe to you and yours. Be not afraid for Madam Mina, she will be my care, if I may. I am old, my legs are not so quick to run as once, and I am not used to ride so long, or to pursue as need be, or to fight with lethal weapons. But I can be of other service. I can fight in other way, and I can die, if need be, as well as younger men. Now let me say that what I would is this. While you, my Lord Godalming, and friend Jonathan, go in your so swift little steamboat up the river, and whilst John and Quincy guard the bank where perchance he might be landed, I will take Madam Mina right into the heart of the enemy's country. Whilst the old fox is tied in his box, floating on the running stream whence he cannot escape to land, where he dares not raise the lid of his coffin box, lest his Slovak carriers should in fear leave him to perish, we shall go in the track where Jonathan went, from Bistritz over the Borgo, and find our way to the castle of Dracula. Here Madam Mina's hypnotic power will surely help, and we shall find our way, all dark and unknown otherwise, after the first sunrise when we are near that fateful place. There's much to be done, and other places to be made sanctify, so that the nest of vipers be obliterated.
Here, Jonathan interrupted him hotly.
Do you mean to say, Professor Van Helsing, that you would bring Mina in her sad case and tainted as she is with the devil's illness right into the jaws of his death trap? Not for all the world, not for heaven or hell.
He became almost speechless for a minute, and then went on.
Do you know what the place is? Have you seen the awful den of hellish infamy, and with the very moonlight alive with grisly shapes and every speck of dust, of monster and embryo? Have you felt the vampire's lips upon your throat?
Here he turned to me, and as his eyes lit on my forehead, he threw up his arms with a cry.
Oh my God! What have we done to have this terror upon us?
And he sank down on the sofa in a collapse of misery. The professor's voice, as he spoke in clear, sweet tones, which seemed to vibrate in the air, calmed us all.
Oh my friend, it is because I would save Madam Mina from that awful place that I would go. God forbid that I should take her into that place. There is work, wild work, to be done before that place can be purified. Remember that we are in terrible straits. If the Count escape us this time, and he is strong and subtle and cunning, he may choose to sleep him for a century, and then in time our dear one...
He took my hand.
Would come to him to keep him company, and would be as those others that you, Jonathan, saw. You have told us of their gloating lips. You heard their ribald laugh as they clutched the moving bags that the Count threw to them. You shudder, and well may it be. Forgive me that I make you so much pain, but it is necessary. My friend, is it not a dire need for that which I am giving, possibly my life? If it were that anyone went into that place to stay, it is I who would have to go to keep them company.
Do as you will,
said Jonathan, with a sob that shook him all over.
We are in the hands of God.
Later. Oh, it did me good to see the way that these brave men worked. How can women help loving men when they are so earnest and so true and so brave? And too, it made me think of the wonderful power of money. What can it not do when basely used? I felt so thankful that Lord Godalming is rich, and both he and Mr. Morris, who also has plenty of money, are willing to spend it so freely. For if they did not, our little expedition could not start, either so promptly or so well equipped, as it will within another hour. It is not 3 hours since it was arranged what part each of us was to do. And now Lord Godalming and Jonathan have a lovely steam launch, with steam up ready to start at a moment's notice. Dr. Seward and Mr. Morris have half a dozen good horses, well appointed. We have all the maps and appliances of various kinds that can be had. Professor Van Helsing and I are to leave by the 11:40 train tonight for Vercity, where we are to get a carriage to drive to the Borgo Pass. We are bringing a good deal of ready money, as we are to buy a carriage and horses. We shall drive ourselves, for we have no one whom we can trust in the matter. The professor knows something of a great many languages, so we shall get on all right. We have all got arms, even for me a large bore revolver. Jonathan would not be happy unless I was armed like the rest. Alas, I cannot carry one arm that the rest do. The scar on my forehead forbids that. Dear Dr. Van Helsing comforts me by telling me that I am fully armed, as there may be wolves. The weather is getting colder every hour, and there are snow furies which come and go as warnings. Later, it took all my courage to say goodbye to my darling. We may never meet again. Courage, Mina. The professor is looking at you keenly. His look is a warning. There must be no tears now, unless it may be that God will let them fall in gladness.
Jonathan Harker's Journal, 30 October. Night. I am writing this in the light from the furnace door of the steam launch. Lord Godalming is firing up. He is an experienced hand at the work, as he has had for years a launch of his own on the Thames, and another on the Norfolk Broads. Regarding our plans, we finally decided that Mina's guess was correct, and that if any waterway were chosen for the Count's escape back to his castle, the Sereth, and then the Bistritza at its junction, would be the one. We took it that somewhere about the 47th degree north latitude would be the place chosen for crossing the country between the river and the Carpathians. We have no fear in running at good speed up the river at night. There is plenty of water, and the banks are wide enough apart to make steaming, even in the dark, easy enough. Lord Godalming tells me to sleep for a while, as it is enough for the present for one to be on watch. But I cannot sleep. How can I, with the terrible danger hanging over my darling and her going into that awful place? My only comfort is that we are in the hands of God. Only for that faith it would be easier to die than to live, and so be quit of all the trouble. Mr. Morris and Dr. Seward were up the right bank, far enough off to get on higher lands where they can see a good stretch of river to avoid the following of its curves. They have, for the first stages, 2 men to ride and lead their spare horses, 4 in all, so as not to excite curiosity. When they dismiss the men, which shall be shortly, they shall themselves look after the horses. It may be necessary for us to join forces. If so, they can mount our whole party. One of the saddles has a movable horn and can be easily adapted for Mina if required. It is a wild adventure we are on. Here, as we are rushing about through the darkness with the cold from the river seeming to rise up and strike us, with all the mysterious voices of the night around us, it all comes home. We seem to be drifting into unknown places and unknown ways, into a whole world of dark and dreadful things. Godalming is shutting the furnace door.
You have been listening to Bram Stoker's Dracula, the radio play, as presented by the Cryptic Canticles. Stay tuned for our next episode at crypticcanticles.com.